From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 2025 has been a whirlwind when it comes to California's political sphere, from the creation and passing of Prop 50 to a field of gubernatorial candidates that seems to grow larger every month, maybe even every week. Add to that major decisions on the federal level that have impacted millions of Californians, like the recent government shutdown and an ongoing fight over extending health care tax credits to prevent premiums from skyrocketing. Not to mention the possible presidential ambitions of outgoing Governor Gavin Newsom. But even as this year comes to an end, there is plenty that will carry over into 2026 with the midterm just around the corner. Joining us now to sort through all of the news is Blake Jones, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Welcome back, Blake.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Okay, so when it comes to the Democratic field for governor in terms of candidates, I mean, it is getting more and more crowded. So we've talked about billionaire and climate activist Tom Steyer joining the race, but now we have Bay Area Representative Eric Swalwell, too. What profile is he trying to set?
Yeah, he's using the existing profile that he has as a sort of Trump antagonist. He built that a few years ago as one of the chief representatives working on impeachment proceedings against President Trump. So he's basically been running on that. And then what is a very message tested issue this year, which is affordability issues writ large, which virtually every candidate in the governor's race on both sides of the aisle is trying to emphasize.
Yeah. And he was on Jimmy Kimmel also. I mean, it's not every day you have like an elected official on a late night talk show.
No, it's not. But it is very much his style. When he announced his run for president in 2019, he also announced that on a late night show. So it's very Eric Swalwell. He, you know, has been doing a lot of cable hits and showing up on TV a whole lot the last few weeks. So that's another big part of how he's been campaigning.
So when it comes to leading Democratic candidates for governor, how big is the field right now?
Well, it is huge. It depends on where you set the cutoff as far as polling numbers go. But, you know, certainly those who have been polling kind of at or near the front of the pack, you've already got Eric Swalwell, Katie Porter, Antonio Villaraigosa, Javier Becerra, you know, and then quite a few others as you get kind of lower down into some of the surveys that we've seen so far. But yeah, it's massive, and it is likely to grow even more. We don't know who exactly will get in, but we know that Attorney General Rob Bonta made quite a few calls just over a week ago to folks in the labor world here and to others, talking about the seriousness of, you know, how he's preparing for a possible run. And, you know, also, as we've been waiting on for months, Rick Caruso, who challenged Karen Bass in the last L.A. mayor's race, could also still get in.
When it comes to Attorney General Bonta, I mean, earlier this year, he decided not to run. Why the change in course?
Yeah, I will say when he made that determination, it was before Kamala Harris decided that she wasn't going to run for governor. And, you know, he's been pretty clear that he would have supported her even preemptively before she made an announcement. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of, you know, what he has said, which is that the folks that he did support didn't end up running, and that this field just frankly lacks some star power as a whole. And I think that that has caused him to see a lane for himself and a competitive one at that.
At this point in the race, because, you know, the primary is just several months away, is it unusual to have so many candidates at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially this many serious candidates, because, yeah, I mean, it's been so many years since we've had something like this in California. Gavin Newsom emerged pretty early as the kind of front runner. When he was running for governor in 2018, I mean, Antonio Villaraigosa, the former L.A. mayor, was also a serious candidate, but it was really down to just the two of them pretty early. And it was the same thing with Jerry Brown when he was kind of returning to the governor's office running for his second stint. And so, yeah, it's quite unusual. And then even if you look back to when Arnold Schwarzenegger was running, he was, you know, clearly the kind of one horse in the race at a certain point.
When it comes to such a crowded field, what does polling look like? How is that shaking out right now?
Honestly, we haven't seen a ton of independent polling that includes Eric Swalwell since he got in. So it's a little bit difficult to gauge. But We did see in some surveys that Katie Porter did take a hit after she had a couple of troublesome videos of her released, one berating a staffer, another, kind of chiding in someone who was interviewing her in a discussion on the race. But other than that, she's still remained, at or around the top of the field. And then there's kind of a significant drop back before you get to Javier Becerra and Antonio Villaraigosa generally. And it's to be seen where Eric Swalwell will be at. There's been maybe one poll, including him, but some people have questioned its methodology.
Mm. Well, moving over to the Republican Party, of course, there's Chad Bianco and Steve Hilton. Are others joining the race as well, or are those pretty much the two leading candidates?
Those are the two leading candidates. I mean, there are a few others who haven't gotten as much support who are running. But I think that broadly among California Republicans, those are the two who are viewed as the most serious. There is a question about now that you have all these Democrats, whether the two of them will be able to kind of consolidate support, either one of them or even there's been some discussion about whether in our jungle primary system here, in which the top two candidates, regardless of party, get through, there's been, some discussion of whether these two Republicans could inevitably get through because there are just so many Democrats in the race. And something that I'm going to be watching in 2026 is whether there is anyone in the third house here or just within Democratic politics who is able to kind of manage that situation and even push for a couple of dropouts to ensure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, is this a good situation for the two Republican leading candidates having such a crowded race of Democrats that could kind of dilute the vote?
Yeah, I think it's great for them. The last few cycles, we've consistently seen one Democrat and one Republican get in, not just in the governor's race, but in a lot of other statewide races, despite this top two system that we have. So this is kind of the dream, because if you get either of those Republicans, but just one through the primary, they're almost doomed to fail due to the Democratic advantage in the state.
How are they talking about each other, the Democratic candidates? Is it mostly cordial? I mean, at some point, they're going to kind of have to go after each other to make themselves stand out in a crowded race.
Yeah, there have been some attempts to create some airspace. For instance, you saw Antonio Villaraigosa cut an ad that was criticizing Javier Becerra's time as Health and Human Services Secretary when he was in the Biden administration, criticizing him over his management of migrant children and how they were basically being processed by the government as they came into the country. You've also seen virtually every campaign hit Katie Porter over those videos that I talked about for a second. You even saw Betty Yee, former controller, who's usually pretty cordial and not much of a flamethrower politically. She called on Katie Porter to resign after that. So yeah, you have seen some attempts to create some airspace, but at a lot of the gubernatorial debates, there's not been that much of a divide on a policy level, other than maybe a Porter being more progressive than Villaraigosa, who's such a moderate.
Well, moving from the state to the national level, there is an ongoing fight over expiring Affordable Care Act credits, which could cause premiums to skyrocket for a lot of Americans, of course, including Californians. But there's been some disagreement, though, among Republicans, including California's delegation. So what's going on at this point?
Yeah, basically, you have a wing of the Republican Party in Congress who are more conservative and are pushing for a total expiration of these subsidies. They're arguing that there need to be spending reductions, and they're willing to sacrifice, this healthcare coverage in order to achieve it. But then you see some moderates and folks who are endangered because of the composition of their districts who are pushing back against that and have been advocating for an extension here in California. Those include Representatives Kevin Kiley and David Valadeo, who were both targeted by Proposition 50 and are, a bit on their heels because of that.
When it comes to Kiley, I mean, he has split with Republican leadership several times in recent months. I think there was like a New York Times article, like the loneliest Republican or something in Congress. I mean, let's expand upon that a little bit. I mean, he is a representative in our listening area. I mean, from the government shutdown to redistricting to now ACA credits. How has he evolved in terms of his relationship with his own party?
It's been pretty incredible to watch just how far out on a limb he has gone to criticize Speaker Mike Johnson. And, you know, yes, this is happening as his district becomes more competitive, but it is also kind of marvelous the way that he has, you know, been able to, by criticizing House leadership, become a lot more relevant within the Republican caucus in just his second term in Congress. That's not something that you often see, especially, you know, from somebody who is new coming from a blue state like California.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's Blake Jones. Moving over to next year, Governor Newsom is going to deliver his final State of the State speech in person, the first time that he's done so since the pandemic. I remember during the pandemic, one of them was like at Dodger Stadium. So what do you know about this final State of the State speech as he's in his final year as governor?
Yeah, we don't know what he's going to focus on yet, but we do, you know, have an understanding it's probably going to include some discussion of the state's financial situation going into his last year, which I'm going to be watching closely. You've already seen the nonpartisan legislative analyst's office here has projected that Gavin Newsom is going to be facing yet another budget deficit in his final year in office. And I am going to be really curious to see, A, which kind of milestones he reflects back on from his term before, you know, what appears to be a likely presidential run in 2028, what he says in this very camera-ready moment that, mm-hmm. who knows, could even end up in a campaign ad later on, and then B, how he tries to address these, you know, other kind of loose ends that he still needs to tie up, including the budget situation before he's out of office.
Yeah, I was wondering how these potential, you know, presidential ambitions could shape the final State of the State speech, given the platform.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of bragging, which I guess is natural of any governor giving that kind of speech. But I think that it, you know, could be an important moment for him to sort of craft a narrative about how he has govern California and set it up to resist President Trump, which obviously has been his main kind of messaging focus over the last few months.
How has the governor been courting potential Democratic supporters if he does choose to run in 2028?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't hurt that he went to Democratic National Committee meetings, you know, just a few days ago and was taking selfies with a bunch of his fans who are members of the DNC and was bopping around to meetings there. And, you know, in addition to that, there's definitely the, you know, international and interstate travel that he's been doing. Like right after Proposition 50 passed, he went out to Texas to rally Democrats there. Earlier, before that, he went to South Carolina. And, you know, in addition to that, he has used his burgeoning fundraising network to kind of fundraise for political causes outside of the state, which I think is a notable way that he's preparing his lane.
Well, as always, Blake, thank you for joining us for a relentless news cycle this year. This is the last time you'll join us on Insight for 2025. And hopefully you have some time to, I don't know, reflect on everything that you have followed and covered this year.
Thank you. I'll try to take some time. Appreciate it.
Blake Jones is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook, getting us up to speed, as always, with the latest developments in state politics. Up next, life on the outside can be full of challenges for those recently released from prison. A Sacramento organization is connecting people who are formerly incarcerated to resources that they need to make the process of reentering society less overwhelming. We'll learn more about their work. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.